Subcommittee of Civil Law is back in session. I'm going to reopen the work session, House Bill 2394. Okay.
Madam Chairman, I had moved the dash one amendment to House Bill 2394.
Any discussion? Representative Shetterly.
Have any testimony on the dash ones? And I know Bob Junedeff is here. In fairness, I feel a little uncomfortable moving without any testimony on the dash ones.
It's certainly up to the chair. I know I've come into this late. I'll just say for the record that I've had an opportunity to consider the issue raised by the dash one amendment, and I know that that issue has been on the table, I think, for discussion purposes since the time we had the original hearing on the bill. When was that, Marilyn?
March.
Early March.
Right,
March,
yeah. So when we started having these discussions in March, and I guess I still remain of the belief, and I recognize why some people would have a problem with it, but I think for people who are sort of having to make that probable cause determination for these community mental health and development disabilities program directors, that giving them access to this information is, in fact, I think, a reasonable thing to do, both for the safety of the individual and for the public safety. So that's the reason that I'm moving the amendment. I think I'm familiar with the arguments. I'm certainly willing to listen to anybody else who wants to say differently.
Madam Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
I'm inclined to support these, too. I just think as a matter of if these were not before us in the hearing, I think it would be worth hearing, at least giving Bob or anybody else an opportunity. And I guess I question, too, one thing that I'm looking at this, does this create a fiscal impact? Or we're granting access, we're creating access to LEDs. I'm not sure how well, how equipped these programs are for LEDs access, what the hardware and other elements might be. Margaret says not.
David Yondell and Bob Junedeff, come forward, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bob Junedeff from the Oregon Advocacy Center. Our original position on this bill has been to oppose it, but without getting into the reasons for that, because you heard about that. On this particular issue, our concerns are as follows, as I would articulate them. There is concern from folks with who've been through the system that allowing access to criminal records as a general matter will confuse the decisions that are being made, that the decisions about commitment are clinical decisions and should be based upon what the person's medical, clinical needs are, not about their criminal history, especially concerning when that criminal history is based upon behaviors that are not linked to mental illness necessarily. Just because a person presents at a hospital and apparently has a mental illness, the fact that they have a criminal history of convictions or arrests does not mean that those behaviors were linked to their mental illness in any way. Now, having said that, the distinction that we would draw between what this bill will certainly allow, which is an investigator to get that information, as opposed to the person who makes the decision about the mental health hold. For the investigator to have that information, the investigator is doing a thorough investigation of the person's circumstances. They're supposed to look at all the clinical records. They're supposed to look at all the facts. They're supposed to talk to witnesses and gather, and under this bill, they'd be able to gather criminal history. But then they're only supposed to pass on to the court relevant information from that criminal history. So at least there's an opportunity for that investigator to take that information, put it in context, and then pass on to the court things that the investigator considers to be relevant to a commitment hearing. And then there's an additional protection because a court gets to see that information, but that information can only be entered as evidence in the commitment hearing if it's relevant and it passes evidentiary muster. So there's lots of protections along the way. It's a thorough investigation type of situation. The feeling about giving this information to the person who, as Margaret indicated, is making very quick split-second decisions about very scarce resources is that the information that person will have will be raw information about criminal history. That person will have no opportunity to link that information to mental illness, to the present behaviors. And what will happen, we would predict, is that people with criminal records will be put on holds and people without criminal records will not be put on holds. It just follows. There isn't any opportunity for the type of calm, reasoned evaluation of that information that would be available, and that's in the later piece. And what that means in terms of from the civil rights perspective is that people who have engaged in criminal behavior will be losing 5 judicial days of their freedom on commitment holds, which they might not have otherwise been subjected to. And then they, of course, are billed for that. So it's good to remember is that when you are put on a commitment hold, you get billed for it. And if you don't have any money, then the county has to pick it up. But you're the first line of payment for that. But from a resource standpoint also, you are moving or shifting the allocation of these scarce resources to more of a criminal enforcement type of mechanism rather than a clinical one. And our concern is that the people who present with the greatest clinical needs are the people who get these resources, and that we're not looking at this as a is an opportunity to deal with criminal behavior. If the person has engaged in criminal behavior and that's the reason they're brought to the hospital, that's one thing. That's the information that the person making that decision will be provided with right there. But we're talking about past criminal behavior, and that's another matter. That's a person carrying an onus in and being treated differently from a clinical perspective because of past criminal behavior. So that's our objection to it.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Charlie.
Thank you. But with Bob, the standards according to which this a person in Margaret's position is going to be making the decision are still the same. I mean, this doesn't change the standards on which their decision has to be based. This just gives them access to one additional facet of information. And it seems to me that where one of the standards is, for instance, is the person dangerous to self or any other person, it seems to me that to know that a person before you has a long history of assaultive behavior, let's say, might just be one more piece of information to inform the evaluator at that point in time, whereas a lead check that shows no history of assaultive behavior would tend to inform in another direction. I don't know. I'm not as bothered by it. I'm glad to have the conversation, but it seems to me it's useful. It's a tool. It's information. It doesn't change what the factors are that the evaluator still has to determine. It just seems to me to provide one bit more of information on which that determination can be made.
Madam Chair, Representative Shetterly, that is correct. It does provide information. The question is, what is the effect of that information? How relevant is it to the decision? And as Margaret testified, if we had more resources, she would probably be admitting all of the people who might present to her as needing that service, but she makes a close decision. And again, given the way that information would be presented to her, without any degree of connectedness to the present situation, she might have two people with the exact same situation and have one person who had a assault conviction 4 years ago. And you have to assume that that is the person who would be admitted, even though there was no indication of whether that particular assault conviction, what the circumstances of it were, whether it was tied to a mental health episode or what it was. Given the need for speed and the lack of time to go and do a thorough investigation, that just means that that person goes in, the other person doesn't.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm not so prepared to assume that that's going to be the case in every situation. It seems to me that that information, like every other bit of information an evaluator is going to pick up on in their short time frame, they're going to have to evaluate in the context of the circumstances of the hold and how the person is presented. And it may be relevant, it may not be relevant, but I don't see any purpose to be served in saying that we're not going to look at that category of information for any purpose whatsoever, when in some cases it may be relevant. It won't be in all, but it seems to me it may be in some.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Yandell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Yandell. I'm the director of the Law Enforcement Data System. I understand that you had some questions.
Yes. Do you have any, have you seen the -1 amendment and have any comments about the -1 amendment in regards to the access to the LEDs? I think there was a question, too, as to the cost or...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as written, I suppose the only question that we may have is if there's any idea of the numbers of individuals that might be accessing LEDs under this provision. In specific response to your question about cost, these individuals would be subject to our audit program pertaining to the appropriate usage of LEDs access. We have approximately 240 agencies that are audited each year. It's on a biannual basis. These individuals would be added to that list. The cost implications at this particular point would be rather negligible, but would be added to the schedule of our existing audit load.
Okay. I'm satisfied. Thank you. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate you coming in. Okay. Representative Williams has made a motion for the adoption of the -1 amendments. Do I hear any further discussion? Discussion, and the -1 amendments are adopted to House Bill 2394. Representative Williams.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2394. Do we need to adopt the -2 amendments?
Yes.
Okay, so I would move the adoption of the -2 amendments to House Bill 2394.
Thank you, Chair Williams. Representative Williams.
Yeah.
Representative Williams has moved that we adopt the -2 amendments to House Bill 2394. Any discussion? Hearing none. -2s are adopted to House Bill 2394.
Madam Chair, I'd move the adoption of House Bill 2394 as amended, I would move House Bill 2394 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Chair Williams has made a motion to move House Bill 2394 as amended with the -1s and -2s to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Do I hear any discussion?
I'm going to provide a courtesy vote yes. I'm still going to try to sort this out. Bottom line is this is a very good public safety measure and a very bad idea regarding civil liberties, so I've got to struggle with this for a little while longer before I find it anywhere within my comfort zone.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Lowe. Roll call, please.
Representative Baffin?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Williams?
Aye. Chair Walker? Aye. House Bill 2394, as amended, is moved to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, before you bang that.
Yes?
I don't want silence to imply acquiescence to or agreement by acquiescence to Representative Lowe's statement that this is bad for civil liberties. I don't agree with that. I think it's a balancing, and I don't think it's bad for civil liberties. I just didn't want silence to imply acquiescence to that, and we're going to go ahead and do it anyway.
Thank you.
Oh, that's a tippy darn.
We have the exchange of ideas here. Okay, closing the work session on Council 23. Yes, who is going to carry this for me? Representative Williams, is this?
Sure, to the full committee. I'm pleased to do so.
And is it on for this afternoon?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. We open the work session on House Bill 2396. Council, would you please give us an update on that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2396 is the pilot lay advocacy program that originally came to you as a program that would be part of the responsibilities of the long-term care ombudsman. The long-term care ombudsman program let us know that they were not interested in being the situs of this program. So at the committee's suggestion, we prepared some amendments. You've previously, I believe, seen the Dash 1 amendments to put this in the Office of the Protection and Advocacy System, which in Oregon is the Oregon Advocacy Center. The Dash 2 and the Dash 3 amendments are virtually the same. They address just some additional concerns with making this a contracted program and the granting structure. And these were issues that were raised by the Oregon Advocacy Center. Bob Jundeff, who's here to answer any questions about the proposal, as well as concerns raised by the Oregon Psychiatric Association. One of the changes that we've made, because this is a granting program, there's a proviso that the Oregon Advocacy Center would need to secure funds in an amount equal to the general fund appropriation of $150,000. There was flexibility built into that to allow if the Oregon Advocacy Center was to raise $125,000 and determine they could adequately serve the needs, that they could come to the mental health division with that amount, and then that would be matched. So it wasn't, it's up to the maximum of $150,000, but that's not a absolute number. The other amendments would specify that the individual complete 40 hours of training that would be a volunteer or demonstrate some equivalent proficiency. It would require the use of a local screening committee prior to the selection of the volunteers in each of the communities to serve as the advocates. The difference between the Dash 2 and the Dash 3 amendments, when the original bill was drafted, it was drafted so that one of the locations of the pilot would be in Lane County. Lane County worked with the group that developed this proposal. At the suggestion of the Oregon Advocacy Center, I've also given you a proposal that does not include a specification of any county. It just specifies one county over 200,000 people, one county under 200,000 people, and any other county that they're able to serve with the available funds.
Not Dash 3.
The Dash 3 is without any specification of county.
Do either the Dash 2 or Dash 3s incorporate Dash 1?
No, they fully replace the Dash 1. And they both stand on their own.
And the fiscal, has that
been the fiscal changed? Is unchanged. It would be, well, the fiscal is changed. It would just be the appropriation that's in here of $150,000.
So this would not apply?
This would not apply. I don't know if the mental health division would put some, cost of their administration on it. I suspect that any cost they would have would be under the $50,000 limit. And I don't know if, there, Richard Templeton's here from mental health. I don't know if they've had a chance to think about that. He's shaking his head no.
No.
I think no, they haven't thought about it. I guess they haven't had a, they haven't reviewed this for cost yet.
Okay, we are in work session. Any questions or discussion on these amendments?
Do you want to have Bob come up and talk to the county? Yeah, the county stuff.
Junda, would you come up, please? Question about the two different amendments, the one from designated the one county and then the other one leaving it open to the others. Would you please give us your opinion on that?
Madam Chair, for the record, Bob Junda, Oregon Advocacy Center. Really, we're comfortable with either one. The question we raised was that we haven't had discussions directly with Lane County. We're assuming that Lane County would be comfortable with this, but we don't know for sure. So that if there were any bumps in the road, it would be nicer to have the flexibility to look for another site rather than statutorily having to shove something down the throat of Lane County if they didn't want it.
In other words, the unwanted gift in dash two may not be a good idea.
Very well put.
Okay. Okay. Any other question of Mr. June Depp? Thank you very much for coming forward.
What are we going to do?
Okay. Any discussion? Chair is open to a motion. The chair moves the adoption of the dash three amendments to House Bill 2396. Any discussion? Hearing none, the dash threes to House Bill 2396 are hereby adopted. Chair moves House Bill 2396 as amended with the dash threes to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Representative Baffin?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Okay, House Bill 2396, as amended, is hereby adopted and passed to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Representative Williams, do you want this as part of the package, or would you prefer someone else to take this one?
Oh, it might be better if someone else carries this one.
Okay, do I have a volunteer? And I guess I do. Okay, we're going to open the work session on 2398.
Thank you, Chair Walker. House Bill 2398 comes to you without any amendments. It is a bill that would allow access to certain information regarding persons with mental illness that are involved in the civil commitment process. This bill is known as Access to Comfort Information. It maintains the current confidentiality of information regarding the individual, but would allow access if the person is unable to consent to the person's presence in a facility. there is also a mechanism built in if the, that the physician at the hospital, may determine that it would not be in the best interest to, release that information. And that would be in the case, for example, of someone who is a victim of domestic violence or something like that. There are also provisions that tie in with the mental health directive where someone can designate an individual who is entitled to receive information in the event that they are hospitalized or incapacitated. And so those persons that are designated would also be entitled to complete access to information under this bill. It allows oral or written consent and requires some notation in the medical record when information is given out.
Okay, thank you. Discussion.
And this, where in the bill does it say only to family members and persons otherwise designated?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
That's line 16 and 17 on page 1.
Line 16 and 17?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Right here.
Or any other person designated by the person.
Representative Lowe, there's also the same kind of provision in Section 4 as well. It specifies the types of individuals that can receive the different types of information that are covered in each of these sections.
There's a provision, too, unless the person requests that it not be provided.
Okay.
That's in line 7 on page 2.
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion on this one?
Yes, I am.
I move House Bill 2398 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Shetterly has made a motion that House Bill 2398 be moved to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Representative
Bachman?
Aye.
Representative
Jones?
Aye.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Chair Walker? Aye. House Bill 2398 moves to full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any volunteers? Representative Bachman? Thank you. Okay, we are through with today's agenda, and I'd like to say that there is a program going on right now downstairs. The Oregon State Capital Foundation's Lewis and Clark presentation started at 10 a.m., so we probably could get in on the last half of it would be my guess. So thank you very much. We are adjourned.
Boy, am I glad I didn't wear a costume today. You were